champions there. We ran right into him, and three or four more that Black ever recognised. I believe Woundwort's there himself. They've come for us. Don't make any mistake about that.
You're sure it's more than a patrol?
I'm certain, answered Holly. We could smell them, and we heard them too, below us in the coombe. We wondered what so many rabbits could be doing there, and we were going down to see when we suddenly came face to face with Campion. We looked at him, and he looked at us, and then I realized what it must mean, and we turned and ran. He didn't follow us, probably because he'd had no orders. But how long will it take them to get here? Blackavar had returned from underground, bringing Silver and Blackberry.
We ought to leave at once, sir, he said to Hazel. We might be able to get quite a long way before they come.
Hazel looked about him.
Anyone who wants to go can go, he said. I shan't. We made this warren ourselves, and Frith only knows what we've been through on account of it. I'm not going to leave it now.
Neither am I, said Bigwig. If I'm for the Black Rabbit, there's one or two from Ephratha will come with me.
There was a short silence. Holly's right to want to stop the holes, went on Hazel. It's the best thing to do. We fill the holes in, good and thorough. Then they have to dig us out. The warren's deep. It's under a bank with tree roots all through it and over the top. How long can all those rabbits stay on the down without attracting Elil? They'll have to give it up.
You don't know these Ephrathans, said Blackover. My mother used to tell me what happened at Nutley Copse. It would be better to go now.
Well, go on then, answered Hazel. I'm not stopping you, and I'm not leaving this warren. It's my home.
He looked at Hyacinthlay, heavy with young, who was sitting in the mouth of the nearest hole and listening to the talk.
How far do you think she'll get? And Clover? Do we leave her or what?
No, we must stay, said Strawberry. I believe El Hereda will save us from this woundwort, and if he doesn't, I'm not going back to Ephrafa. I'll tell you that.
Fill in the holes, said Hazel.
As the sun set, the rabbits fell to clawing and scrabbling in the runs. The sides were hard with the hot weather. It was not easy to get started, and when the soil began to fall, it was light and powdery, and did little to block the holes. It was Blackberry who hit upon the idea of working outward from inside the honeycomb itself, scratching down the ceilings of the runs where they came into the meeting hall and blocking the holes by breaking the underground walls into them. One run, leading up into the wood, was left open for coming and going. It was the one where Kihar used to shelter, and the lobby at the mouth was still cluttered with guano. As Hazel passed the place, it occurred to him that Woundwort did not know that Kihar had left them. He dug out as much of the mess as he could and scattered it about. Then, as the work went on below, he squatted on the bank and watched the darkening eastern skyline. His thoughts were very sad. Indeed, they were desperate. Although he had spoken resolutely in front of the others, he knew only too well how little hope there was of saving the warren from the Ephrathans. They knew what they were doing. No doubt they had their methods of breaking into a closed warren. It was the faintest of chances that Elil would disperse them. Most of the thousand hunted rabbits for food. A stoat or a fox took a rabbit and took no more until it was ready to hunt again. But the Ephrathans were accustomed to a death here and there. Unless General Woundwort himself were killed, they would stay until the job was done. Nothing would stop them, short of some unexpected catastrophe. But suppose that he himself were to go and talk to Woundwort. Might there not just possibly be a chance of getting him to see sense? Whatever had happened at Nutley Copse, the Ephrathans could not fight to the finish against rabbits like Bigwig, Holly and Silver without losing lives. Probably a good many lives. Woundwort must know this. Perhaps it might not be too late, even now, to persuade him to agree to a new plan. A plan that would be as good for one warren as the other.
And perhaps it might be, thought Hazel grimly. But it's a possible chance, and so I'm afraid the chief rabbit has got to take it. And since this savage brute is probably not to be trusted, I suppose the chief rabbit must go alone.
He returned to the honeycomb and found Bigwig.
I'm off to talk to General Woundwort, if I can get hold of him, he said. You're chief rabbit until I come back. Keep them at it.
But Hazel, said Bigwig,
Wait a moment, it's not safe.
I shan't be long, said Hazel. I'm just going to ask him what he's up to.
A moment later, he was down the bank and limping up the track, pausing from time to time to sit up and look about him for an Effrophon patrol. Chapter 43, The Great Patrol. What is the world, O soldiers? It is I, this incessant snow, this northern sky. Soldiers, this solitude through which we go is I. Walter de la Mare, Napoleon. When the punt floated down the river in the rain, part of General Wundwort's authority went with it. He could not have appeared more openly and completely at a loss if Hazel and his companions had flown away over the trees. Until that very moment he had shown up strongly, a most formidable adversary. His officers had been demoralized by Kihar's unexpected attack. He had not. On the contrary, he had kept up the pursuit in spite of Kihar, and had actually carried out a scheme to cut off the fugitive's retreat. Cunning and resourceful in adversity, he had nearly succeeded in hurting the gull when he leaped at him out of the close cover by the plank bridge. Then, when he had his quarry cornered in a place where Kihar could not have done a great deal to help them, they had suddenly shown their own cunning, greater than his, and left him bewildered on the bank. He had overheard the very word, Tharn, spoken by one of his officers to another, as they returned to Ephrafa through the rain. Thleli, Blackavar, and the does of the Nearhind had vanished. He had tried to stop them, and he had conspicuously failed. For a great part of that night, Wundwort remained awake, considering what was best to be done. The following day he called a council meeting. He pointed out that it would be no good taking an expedition down the river to look for Thleli unless it was strong enough to defeat him if it found him. That would mean taking several officers and a number of the Ausla. There would be the risk of trouble at home while they were away. There might be another breakout. The odds were that they would not find Thleli at all, for there would be no trail, and they did not know where to search for him. If they did not find him, they would look even bigger fools when they came back. And fools we look now, said Wundwort. Make no mistake about that. Vervain will tell you what the marks are seeing. The Campion was chased into the ditch by the white bird, and Thleli called down lightning from the sky, and Frith knows what besides.
The best thing, said old Snowdrop, will be to say as little about it as possible. Let it blow over. They've got short memories.
There's one thing I think worth doing, said Wundwort. We know now that there was one place where we did find Thleli and his gang. Only nobody realized it at the time. That was when Mallow was after them with his patrol, just before he was killed by the fox. Something tells me that where they were once, there they'll be again, sooner or later.
But we can hardly stay out there with enough rabbits to fight them, sir, said Grounsel, and it would mean digging in and living there for some time.
I agree with you, replied Wundwort. Our patrol will be stationed there continuously until further notice. They'll dig scrapes and live there. They'll be relieved every 2 days. If Thraley comes, he's to be watched and followed secretly. When we know where he's taken the does, then we may be able to deal with him. And I'll tell you this, he ended, glaring round at them with his great, pale eyes. If we do find out where he is, I shall be ready to go to a great deal of trouble. I told Thraley I'd kill him myself. He may have forgotten that, but I haven't. Wundwort led the first patrol in person, taking Grounsel to show him where Mallow had picked up the stranger's southward trail. They dug scrapes among the scrub along the edge of Caesar's belt and waited. After 2 days, their hopes were lower. Vervain relieved Wundwort. He was relieved 2 days later by Campion. By this time, there were captains in the Ausla who said privately to each other that the general was in the grip of an obsession. Some way would have to be found of getting him to drop it before it went too far. At the council meeting the next evening,
it was suggested that the patrol should be discontinued in 2 days' time. Woundwort, snarling, told them to wait and see. An argument began, behind which he sensed more opposition than he had ever encountered before. In the middle of this, with a dramatic effect that could not have been better timed from the general's point of view, Campion and his patrol came in, dead beat, with the report that they had met Thlaley and his rabbits exactly where Woundwort had said they would. Unseen, they had followed them to their warren, which, though a long way off, was not too distant to be attacked, especially since no time would have to be spent in searching for it. It did not appear to be very large, and could probably be surprised. The news put an end to all opposition, and brought both Council and Ausler back under Woundwort's undisputed control. Several of the officers were for starting at once, but Woundwort, now that he was sure of his followers and his enemy, took his time. Having learned from Campion that he had actually come face to face with Thlaley, Blackover, and the rest, he decided to wait some little while, in case they might be on their guard. Besides, he wanted time both to reconnoiter the way to Watership and to organize the expedition. His idea was that, if possible, they should make the journey in 1 day. This would forestall any possible rumors of their approach. To satisfy himself that they could do this and still be fit to fight when they arrived, he took Campion and 2 others, and himself covered the 3.5 miles to the down east of Watership. Here, he grasped at once the best way to approach the beach hangar without being seen or smelled. The prevailing wind was westerly, as at Ephrafah. They would arrive at evening, and then assemble and rest in the coombe south of Cannon Heath Down. As soon as twilight fell and Thlaley and his rabbits had gone underground, they would come along the ridge and attack the warren. With luck, there would be no warning whatever. They would be safe for the night in the captured warren, and the following day, he himself in Vervain would be able to return to Ephrafah. The remainder, under Campion, could have a day's rest, and then make their way back with the does and any other prisoners there might be. The whole thing could be finished in 3 days. It would be best not to take too many rabbits. Anyone not strong enough to go the distance and then fight would only be a nuisance. In the event, speed might turn out to be everything. The slower the journey, the more dangerous it would be, and stragglers would attract Elil and discourage the rest. Besides, as Woundwort very well knew, his leadership was going to be vital. Every rabbit would need to feel that he was close to the general. And if he felt himself one of a picked band as well, that would be all to the good. The rabbits to go were chosen most carefully. There were, in fact, about 26 or 27 of them, half Ausler and the rest promising youngsters recommended by their mark officers. Woundwort believed in emulation, and he let it be known that there would be plenty of chances to win rewards. Campion and Chervil were kept busy taking out endurance patrols, and tussles and training fights were organized at Morning Silfley. The members of the expedition were excused all sentry duties and allowed to Silfley whenever they wished. They started before dawn, one clear August morning, going due north in groups along the banks and hedges. Before they had reached the belt, Grounsell's party was attacked by a pair of stoats, one old and the other a yearling. Woundwort, hearing the squealing from behind him, covered the distance in a few moments and set upon the veteran stoat with slashing teeth and great kicks from his needle-clawed back paws. With one of its forelegs ripped to the shoulder, it turned and made off, the younger one following. "You ought to be able to see to these things yourself," said Woundwort to Grounsell. "Stoats aren't dangerous. Come on." Shortly after Neafrith, Woundwort went back to pick up stragglers. He found 3, one injured by a piece of glass. He stopped the bleeding, brought the 3 up to rejoin their groups, and then called a halt to rest and feed, himself keeping a watch round about. It was very hot, and some of the rabbits were showing signs of exhaustion. Woundwort formed these into a separate group and took charge of it himself. By the early evening,
about the same time as Dandelion was beginning the story of Rowsby Woof. The Effrophins had skirted an enclosure of pigs east of Cannon Heath Farm and were slipping into the coombe south of Cannon Heath Down. Many were tired, and in spite of their tremendous respect for Wundwort, there was a certain feeling that they had come a long way from home. They were ordered to take cover, feed, rest, and wait for sunset. The place was deserted, except for yellowhammers and a few mice pattering about in the sun. Some of the rabbits went to sleep in the long grass. The slope was already in shadow when Campion came running down with the news that he had come face to face with Blackover and Holly in the upper part of the coombe. Wundwort was annoyed. "What made them come traipsing over here, I wonder?" he said. "Couldn't you have killed them? Now we've lost surprise." "I'm sorry, sir," said Campion. "I wasn't really alert at the time, and I'm afraid they were a bit too quick for me. I didn't pursue them because I wasn't sure whether you'd want me to."
"Well, it may not make much difference," said Wundwort. "I don't see what they can do. But they'll try to do something, I suppose, now they know we're here."
As he went among his rabbits, looking them over and encouraging them, Wundwort considered the situation. One thing was clear. There was no longer the chance of catching Thlaeli and the rest off their guard. But perhaps they were already so much frightened that they would not fight at all. The bucks might give up the does to save their own lives, or they might already be on the run, in which case they must be followed and caught at once, for they were fresh, and his own rabbits were tired and could not pursue them far. He ought to find out quickly. He turned to a young rabbit of the neck mark, who was feeding close at hand.
"Your name's Thistle, isn't it?" he asked.
"Thistle, sir," answered the rabbit.
"Well, you're the very fellow I want," said Wundwort.
"Go and find Captain Campion, and tell him to meet me up there by that juniper. Do you see what I mean? At once. We'd better come there too. Be quick. There's no time to lose." As soon as Campion and Thistle had joined him, Wundwort took them up to the ridge. He meant to see what was happening over at the beach hangar. If the enemy were already in flight, Thistle could be sent back with a message to Groundsel and Vervain to bring everyone up immediately. If they were not, he would see what threats could do. They reached the track above the coombe and began to make their way along it with some caution, since the sunset was in their eyes. The light west wind carried a fresh smell of rabbits.
"If they are running, they haven't gone far," said Wundwort. "But I don't think they are running. I think they're still in their warren."
At that moment, a rabbit came out of the grass and sat up in the middle of the track. He paused for a few moments and then moved toward them. He was limping and had a strained, resolute look.
"You're General Wundwort, aren't you?" said the rabbit. "I've come to talk to you."
"Did Thlaeli send you?" asked Wundwort.
"I'm a friend of Thlaeli," replied the rabbit. "I've come to ask why you're here and what it is you want."
"Were you on the river bank in the rain?" said Wundwort.
"Yes, I was."
"What was left unfinished there will be finished now," said Wundwort. "We are going to destroy you."
"You won't find it easy," replied the other. "You'll take fewer rabbits home than you brought. We should both do better to come to terms."
"Very well," said Wundwort. "These are the terms. You will give back all the does who ran from Ephrafa, and you will hand over the deserters Thlaeli and Blackover to my Ousler."
"No, we can't agree to that. I've come to suggest something altogether different and better for us both. A rabbit has two ears. A rabbit has two eyes. Two nostrils. Our two warrens ought to be like that. They ought to be together, not fighting. We ought to make other warrens between us. Start one between here and Ephrafa, with rabbits from both sides. You wouldn't lose by that. You'd gain. We both would. A lot of your rabbits are unhappy now, and it's all you can do to control them. But with this plan, you'd soon see a difference. Rabbits have enough enemies as it is. They ought not to make more among themselves. A mating between three independent warrens. What do you say?
At that moment, in the sunset on Watership Down, there was offered to General Wundwort the opportunity to show whether he was really the leader of vision and genius which he believed himself to be, or whether he was no more than a tyrant with the courage and cunning of a pirate. For one beat of his pulse, the lame rabbit's idea shone clearly before him. He grasped it and realized what it meant. The next, he had pushed it away from him. The sun dipped into the cloud bank, and now he could see clearly the track along the ridge leading to the beach hangar and the bloodshed for which he had prepared with so much energy and care.
"I haven't time to sit here talking nonsense," said Wundwort. "You're in no position to bargain with us. There's nothing more to be said. Thistle, go back and tell Captain Fairvane I want everyone up here at once."
"In this rabbit, sir?" asked Campion. "Shall I kill him?"
"No," replied Wundwort. "Since they've sent him to ask our terms, he'd better take them back. Go and tell Thraley that if the does aren't waiting outside your warren with him and Blackavar by the time I get down there, I'll tear the throat out of every buck in the place by Neafrith tomorrow."
The lame rabbit seemed about to reply, but Wundwort had already turned away and was explaining to Campion what he was to do. Neither of them bothered to watch the lame rabbit as he limped back by the way he had come. Chapter 44. A Message from El Herrera. The enforced passivity of their defence, the interminable waiting, became insupportable. Day and night they heard the muffled thud of the picks above, and dreamt of the collapse of the grotto, and of every ghastly eventuality. They were subject to castle mentality in its most extreme form. Robin Fedden, Crusader Castles.
"They've stopped digging, Hazelrar," said Speedwell. "As far as I can tell, there's no one in the hole."
In the close darkness of the honeycomb, Hazel pushed past three or four of his rabbits, crouching among the tree roots, and reached a higher shelf where Speedwell lay listening for sounds from above. The Effrophants had reached the hangar at early twilight, and had once begun a search along the banks and among the trees to find out how big the warren was and where its holes were. They had been surprised to find so many holes in such a small area, for not many of them had had experience of any warren but Effrophah, where a very few holes served the needs of many rabbits. At first they had supposed that there must be a large number of rabbits underground. The silence and emptiness of the open beechwood made them suspicious, and most kept outside, nervous of an ambush. Wundwort had to reassure them. Their enemies, he explained, were fools who made more runs than any properly organized warren needed. They would soon discover their mistake, for every one would be opened until the place became impossible to defend. As for the droppings of the white bird, scattered in the wood, it was plain that they were old. There were no signs whatever that the bird was anywhere near. Nevertheless, many of the rank and file continued to look cautiously about them. At the sudden cry of a peewit on the down, one or two bolted and had to be brought back by their officers. The story of the bird which had fought for Thraley in the storm had lost nothing in the telling up and down the burrows of Effrophah. Wundwort told Campion to post sentries and keep a patrol round about, while Vervain and Groundsel tackled the blocked holes. Groundsel set to work along the bank, while Vervain went into the wood, where the mouths of the holes lay between the tree roots. He came at once upon the open run. He listened, but all was quiet. Vervain, who was more used to dealing with prisoners than with enemies, ordered two of his rabbits to make their way down it. The discovery of the silent open run gave him the hope that they might be able to seize the warren by a sudden dash to the very centre. The wretched rabbits, obeying his orders, were met by Silver and Buckthorn at a point where the run opened out. They were cuffed and mauled and barely got out with their lives. The sight of them did nothing to encourage Vervain's party, who were reluctant to dig and made little headway during the darkness before moonrise. Groundsel, who felt that he ought to set an example, himself dug his way into the loose fallen soil of one of the bank runs. Ploughing over the soft earth like a fly on summer butter and holding his head clear, he suddenly found himself face to face with Blackavar, who sank his front teeth into his throat. Groundsel, with no freedom to use his weight, screamed and kicked out as best he could. Blackavar hung on, and Groundsel, a heavy rabbit, like all the Effrathan officers, dragged him forward a short distance before he could rid himself of his grip. Blackavar spat out a mouthful of fur and jumped clear, clawing with his front paws. But Groundsel had already gone. He was lucky not to have been more severely wounded. It became clear to Woundwort that it was going to be extremely difficult, if not impossible, to take the warren by attack down the defended runs. There would be a good chance of success if several runs could be opened and then tackled at the same time, but he doubted whether his rabbits would attempt it after what they had seen. He realized that he had not given enough thought earlier on to what he would have to do if he lost surprise and had to force an entry. He had better give it some thought now. As the moon rose, he called Campion in and talked it over with him. Campion's suggestion was that they should simply starve the warren out. The weather was warm and dry, and they could easily stay 2 or 3 days. This Woundwort rejected impatiently. In his own mind, he was not altogether certain that daylight might not bring the white bird down upon them. They ought to be underground by dawn. But apart from this secret anxiety, he felt that his reputation depended on a fighting victory. He had brought his Ausla to get at these rabbits, knock them down, and beat them. A siege would be a miserable anticlimax. Also, he wanted to get back to Ephrafa as soon as he could. Like most warlords, he was never very confident about what was going on behind his back. "If I remember rightly," he said, "after the main part of the warren at Nutley Copse was taken and the fighting was as good as over, there were a few rabbits who shut themselves into a smaller burrow, where it was difficult to get at them. I said they were to be dealt with, and then I went back to Ephrafa with the prisoners." "How were they dealt with, and who did it? Do you know?" "Captain Mallow did it," said Campion. "He's dead, of course, but I expect there's someone here who was with him. I'll go and find out." He returned with a heavy, stolid, Ausla sentry named Ragwort, who at first had some difficulty in understanding what it was that the general wanted to know. At last, however, he said that when he had been with Captain Mallow more than a year ago, the captain had told them to dig a hole straight down into the ground. In the end, the earth had given way under them, and they had fallen down among some rabbits whom they had fought and beaten. "Well, that's about the only way it can be done," said Woundwort to Campion. "And if we get them all onto it, relieving each other in shifts, we should have a way into the place before dawn. You'd better get your sentries out again, not more than 2 or 3. And we'll make a start at once." Soon after, Hazel and his rabbits, below in the honeycomb, heard the first sounds of scratching above. It was not long before they realized that the digging was going on at 2 points. One was at the north end of the honeycomb, above the place where the tree roots formed a kind of cloister in the burrow. Here the roof, latticed through and through with fine roots, was very strong. The other seemed to be more or less above the open centre of the honeycomb, but rather nearer to the south end, where the hole broke up into bays and runs with columns of earth between. Beyond these runs lay several of the warren's burrows. One, lined with fur torn from her own belly, contained clover and the pile of grass and leaves covered over with earth in which her newborn litter was sleeping.
"Well, we seem to be putting them to a great deal of trouble," said Hazel. "That's all to the good. It'll blunt their claws, and I should think they'll be tired out before they've done. What do you make of it, Blackberry?"
"I'm afraid it's a bad lookout, Hazelrath," replied Blackberry. "It's true they're in trouble up at the top end. There's a lot of ground above us there, and the roots will hold them up for a long time. But down this end it's easier for them. They're bound to dig through fairly soon. Then the roof will come in, and I can't see that we can do anything to stop them."
Hazel could feel him trembling as he spoke. As the sounds of digging continued, he sensed fear spreading all through the burrow.
"They'll take us back to Ephrathah," whispered Vilthuril to Thethuthanang. "The Warren police." "Be quiet," said Heisenthley. "The bucks aren't talking like that, and why should we? I'd rather be here now, as we are, than never have left Ephrathah."
It was bravely said, but Hazel was not the only one who could tell her thoughts. Bigwig remembered the night in Ephrathah when he had calmed her by talking of the high downs and the certainty of their escape. In the dark, he nuzzled Hazel's shoulder and pressed him over to one side of the wide burrow.
"Listen, Hazel," he said. "We're not finished yet, not by a long way. When the roof breaks, they'll come down into this end of the honeycomb, but we can get everybody back into the sleeping burrows behind and block the runs that lead to them. They'll be no better off."
"Well, if we do that, it'll last a bit longer," said Hazel. "But they'll soon be able to break into the sleeping burrows once they're in here."
"They'll find me there when they do," said Bigwig. "And one or two more besides. I shouldn't wonder if they didn't decide to go home." With a kind of wry envy, Hazel realized that Bigwig was actually looking forward to meeting the Ephrathah assault. He knew he could fight, and he meant to show it. He was not thinking of anything else. The hopelessness of their chances had no important place in his thoughts. Even the sound of the digging, clearer already, only set him thinking of the best way to sell his life as dearly as he could. But what else was there for any of them to do? At least Bigwig's preparations would keep the others busy, and perhaps do something to dispel the silent fear that filled all the warren.
"You're quite right, Bigwig," he said. "Let's prepare a little reception. Will you tell Silver and the others what you want and get them started?"
As Bigwig began to explain his plan to Silver and Holly, Hazel sent Speedwell to the north end of the honeycomb to listen to the digging and keep reporting what he could make out about its progress. As far as he could see, it would make little difference whether the roof fall came there or in the center, but at least he ought to try to show the others that he was keeping his wits about him.
"We can't break these walls down to stop the run between Bigwig," said Holly. "They hold the roof up at this end, you know."
"I know that," answered Bigwig. "We'll dig into the walls of the sleeping burrows behind. They'll need to be bigger anyway, if we're all going to get in there together. Then kick the loose earth back into the spaces between the columns. Stop the whole thing right up."
Since he had come out of Ephrathah, Bigwig's standing was very high. Seeing him in good heart, the others set aside their fear as best they could and did as he told them, enlarging the burrows beyond the south end of the honeycomb and piling up the soft earth in the entry runs until what had been a colonnade began to become a solid wall. It was during a pause in this work that Speedwell reported that the digging above the north end had stopped. Hazel went and crouched beside him, listening for some time. There was nothing to be heard. He went back to where Buckthorn sat guarding the foot of the single open run, Kihar's run, as it was called.
"You know what's happened," he said. "They've realized they're all among the beetroots up there, so they've chucked it. They'll be going harder at the other end now."
"I suppose so, Hazelra," replied Buckthorn. After a little, he said, "Do you remember the rats in the barn? We got out of that all right, didn't we? But I'm afraid we shan't get out of this. It's a pity, after all we've done together."
"Yes, we shall," said Hazel, with all the conviction he could muster. But he knew that if he stayed, he would not be able to keep up the pretense.
Buckthorn, a decent, straightforward fellow, if ever there was one, where would he be by Neafrith tomorrow? And he himself, where had he led them with all his clever schemes? Had they come over the common, among the shining wires, through the thunderstorm, the culverts on the great river, to die at the claws of General Wundwert? It was not the death they deserved. It was not the right end of the clever track they had run. But what could stop Wundwert? What could save them now? Nothing, he knew, unless some tremendous blow were to fall upon the Ephrathans from outside, and of that there was no chance. He turned away from Buckthorn. Scratch, 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 scratch came the sound of the digging above. Crossing the floor in the dark, Hazel found himself beside another rabbit, who was crouching silently on the near side of the new-piled wall. He stopped, sniffing.
It was Fiver.
"Aren't you working?" he asked listlessly.
"No," replied Fiver.
"I'm listening."
"To the digging, you mean?"
"No, not the digging. There's something I'm trying to hear. Something the others can't hear. Only I can't hear it either.
But it's close.
Deep. Leaf drift deep.
I'm going away, Hazel. Going away."
His voice grew slow and drowsy.
"Falling. But it's cold.
Cold."
The air in the dark burrow was stifling. Hazel bent over Fiver, pushing the limp body with his nose.
"Cold," muttered Fiver. How cold?"
There was a long silence.
"Fiver," said Hazel.
"Fiver, can you hear me?"
Suddenly a terrible sound broke from Fiver, a sound at which every rabbit in the warren leapt in dreadful fear. A sound that no rabbit had ever made, that no rabbit had the power to make. It was deep and utterly unnatural. The rabbits working on the far side of the wall crouched, terrified. One of the does began to squeal.
"Dirty little beast!"
yelped Fiver.
How dare you! Get out! 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 Out!"
Bigwig burst through the piled earth, twitching and panting.
"In the name of Frith, stop him!" he gasped. "They'll all go mad!"
Shuddering, Hazel clawed at Fiver's side.
"Wake, Fiver, wake!"
But Fiver was lying in a deep stupor. In Hazel's mind, green branches were straining in the wind. Up and down they swayed, thresh and ply. There was something he could glimpse between them. What was it? Water, he sensed, and fear. Then suddenly he saw clearly, for an instant, a little huddle of rabbits on the bank of a stream at dawn, listening to the sound of yelping in the wood above and the scolding of a jay.
"If I were you, I shouldn't wait until Neafreath. I should go now. In fact, I think you'll have to. There's a large dog loose in the wood. There's a large dog loose in the wood."
The wind blew. The trees shook their myriads of leaves. The stream was gone. He was in the honeycomb, facing Bigwig in the dark across the motionless body of Fiver. The scratching from above was louder and closer.
"Bigwig," said Hazel, "do as I say at once. There's a good fellow. We've got hardly any time. Go and get Dandelion and Blackberry and bring them to me at the foot of Kihar's run. Quickly!"
At the foot of the run, Buckthorn was still in his place. He had not moved at Fiver's cry, but his breath was short and his pulse very quick. He and the other three rabbits gathered about Hazel without a word.
"I've got a plan," said Hazel. "If it works, it'll finish Woundwort for good and all. But I've no time to explain. Every moment counts now. Dandelion and Blackberry, you come with me. You're to go straight up out of this run and through the trees to the down, then northward, over the edge and down to the fields. Don't stop for anything. You'll go faster than I shall. Wait for me by the iron tree at the bottom."
"But Hazel," said Blackberry.
"As soon as we've gone," said Hazel, turning to Bigwig, "you're to block this run and get everyone back behind the wall you've made. If they break in, hold them up as long as you can. Don't give in to them on any account. El Herrera has shown me what to do."
"But where are you going, Hazel?" asked Bigwig.
"To the farm," said Hazel, "to gnaw another rope. Now, you two, follow me up the run, and don't forget, you stop for nothing until you're down the hill. If there are rabbits outside, don't fight, run."
Without another word, he dashed up the tunnel and out into the wood with Blackberry and Dandelion on his heels.
Chapter 45. Nuthanger Farm Again.
"Cry havoc, and let slip the dogs of war." Shakespeare, Julius Caesar. At that moment, General Woundwort, out on the open grass below the bank, was facing Thistle and Ragwort in the checkered yellow moonlight of the small hours.
"You weren't put at the mouth of that run to listen," he said. "You were put there to stop anyone breaking out. You had no business to leave it. Get back at once."
"I give you my word, sir," said Thistle, querulously.
There's some animal down there that is not a rabbit. We both heard it.
And did you smell it? Asked Wundwort.
No, sir. No tracks or droppings either. But we both heard an animal, and it was no rabbit.
Several of the diggers had left their work and were gathered nearby, listening. A muttering began.
They had a hombo that killed Captain Mallow. My brother was there. He saw it.
They had a great bird that turned into a shaft of lightning.
There was another animal that took them away down the river. Why can't we go home?
Stop that, said Wundwort.
He went up to the group.
Who said that?
You, was it? Very well. Go home. Go on. Hurry up. I'm waiting. That's the way. Over there.
The rabbit did not move.
Wundwort looked slowly round.
Right, he said. Anyone else who wants to go home can get on with it. It's a nice long way, and you'll have no officers, because they'll all be busy digging, including myself. Captain Vervain, Captain Groundsel, will you come with me? You, Thistle, go out there and fetch Captain Campion. And you, Ragwort, get back to the mouth of that run. You had no business to leave.
Very soon, the digging was resumed. The hole was deep now, deeper than Wundwort had expected, and still there was no sign of a fall. But all three rabbits could sense that not far below them there lay a hollow space.
Keep at it, said Wundwort. It won't take long now.
When Campion came in, he reported that he had seen three rabbits running away over the down to the north. One appeared to be the lame rabbit. He had been about to pursue them, but had returned in response to the order brought by Thistle.
It doesn't matter, said Wundwort. Let them go. There'll be three less when we get in. What? You again?
He snapped as Ragwort appeared beside him.
What is it this time?
The open run, sir, said Ragwort. It's been broken in and stopped from down below.
Then you can start doing something useful, said Wundwort. Get that root out. Know that one, you fool!
The digging continued as the first streaks of light began to come into the east. The great field at the foot of the escarpment had been reaped, but the straw had not yet been burned, and lay in long pale rows upon the darker stubble, tenting over the bristling stalks and the weeds of harvest. Knotgrass and pimpernel, fluellen and speedwell, heartsease and persicary, colourless and still in the old moonlight. Between the lines of straw, the expanse of stubble was as open as the down.
Now, said Hazel, as they came out from the belt of hawthorn and dogwood where the pylon stood. Are you both sure you understand what we're going to do?
It's a tall order, isn't it, Hazelra? Answered Dandelion. But we've got to try it, that's certain. There's nothing else that'll save the warren now.
Come on, then, said Hazel. The going's easy anyway. Half as far now the field's been cut. Don't bother about cover. Just run in the open. Keep with me, though. I'll go as fast as I can.
They crossed the field easily enough, Dandelion running ahead. The only alarm came when they startled four partridges, which whirred away over the hedge to the west and sailed down, spread-winged into the field beyond. Soon they reached the road, and Hazel halted among the quickset on top of the nearer bank.
Now, Blackberry, he said, this is where we leave you. Lie close and don't move. When the time comes, don't break too soon. You've got the best head of any of us. Use it and keep it too. When you get back, go to ground and Gihar's run and stay there till things are safe. Have you got your line clear?
Yes, Hazel-Ra, replied Blackberry. But as far as I can see, I may have to run from here to the iron tree without a check. There's no cover.
I know, said Hazel. It can't be helped. If the worst comes to the worst, you have to turn for the hedge and then keep popping in and out of it. Do whatever you like. There's no time for us to stay and work it out. Only make sure you get back to the warren. It all depends on you.
Blackberry burrowed his way into the moss and ivy round the base of the thorn. The other two crossed the road and made uphill toward the sheds beside the lane.
Good roots they keep here, said Hazel, as they passed them and reached the hedge. Pity we've no time just now. When this is over, we'll have a nice quiet raid on the place.
I hope we do, Hazel-Ra, said Dandelion. Are you going straight up the lane? What about cats?
It's the quickest way, said Hazel.
That's all that matters now. By this time the first light was clear, and several larks were up. As they approached the great ring of elm trees, they heard once more the quick sighing and rustling above them, and one yellow leaf came spinning down to the edge of the ditch. They reached the top of the slope and saw before them the barns and the farmyard. Birdsong was breaking out all round, and the rooks were calling from high in the elms, but nothing, not even a sparrow, moved on the ground. Straight in front, on the other side of the farmyard, close to the house, stood the dog kennel. The dog was not to be seen, but the rope, tied to the eye-bolt on the flat roof, trailed over the edge and disappeared across the straw-covered threshold.
"We're in time," said Hazel. "The brute's still asleep. Now, Dandelion, you mustn't make any mistake. You lie in the grass just there, opposite the kennel. When the rope's gnawed through, you'll see it fall. Unless the dog's ill or deaf, it'll be alert by then, probably before, I'm afraid. But that's my lookout. It's up to you to attract it and make it chase you all the way down to the road. You're very fast. Take care it doesn't lose you. Use the hedges if you want to, but remember it'll be trailing the rope. Get it down to Blackberry, that's all that matters."
"If we ever meet again, Hazelrah," said Dandelion, as he took cover in the grass verge, "we ought to have the makings of the best story ever."
"And you'll be the chap to tell it," said Hazel.
He moved away in a half-circle to the morning side and reached the wall of the farmhouse. Then he began to hop cautiously along the wall, in and out of the narrow flower bed. His head was a tumult of smells: phlox and bloom, ashes, cow dung, dog, cat, hens, stagnant water. He came to the back of the kennel, reeking of creosote and of rank straw. A half-used bale of straw stood against it, no doubt clean bedding which, in the dry weather, had not been put back under cover. Here at least was one piece of luck, for he had expected to have trouble in getting on the roof. He scrambled up the straw. Across part of the felted roof lay a torn piece of old blanket, wet with dew. Hazel sat up, sniffing, and put his forepaws on it. It did not slip. He pulled himself up. How much noise had he made? How strong was his scent over the tar and straw and farmyard? He waited, tense to jump, expecting movement below. There was no sound. In a terrible miasma of dog smell, which gripped him with fear and called run, run down every nerve, he crept forward to where the eye-bolt was screwed into the roof. His claws scraped slightly, and he stopped again. Still there was no movement. He crouched down and began to nibble and gnaw at the thick cord. It was easier than he had thought it would be. It was a good deal easier than the cord on the punt, though about as thick. The punt cord had been drenched through with rain, pliant, slippery, and fibrous. This, though dewy on the outside, was dry cord and light. In very little time, the clean inside was showing. His chisel-like foreteeth bit steadily, and he felt the dry strands rip. The cord was as good as half through already. At that moment, he felt the heavy weight of the dog move beneath him. It stretched, shuddered, and yawned. The rope moved a little, and the straw rustled. The foul smell of it came strong in a cloud. "It doesn't matter if it hears me now," thought Hazel. "If only I can get the rope bitten through quickly, it doesn't matter. The dog'll go to Dandelion, if only I can be quick enough to make sure that the rope breaks when it begins to tug." He ripped at the cord again and sat back for a quick breath, looking across the track to where Dandelion was waiting. Then he froze and stared. A short distance behind Dandelion, in the grass, was the white-chested tabby, wide-eyed, tail-lashing, crouching. It had seen both himself and Dandelion. As he watched, it crept a length nearer. Dandelion was lying still, watching the front of the kennel intently, as he had been told. The cat tensed itself to spring. Before he knew what he was doing, Hazel stamped on the hollow roof. Twice he stamped, and then turned to leap to the ground and run. Dandelion, reacting instantly, shot out of the grass to the open gravel. In the same moment, the cat jumped and landed exactly where he had been lying. The dog gave two quick, sharp barks and rushed out of the kennel. It saw Dandelion at once and ran to the full extent of the rope. The rope went taut, held for an instant, and then parted at the point where Hazel had gnawed it to a thread. The kennel jerked forward,
tilted, fell back, and struck the ground with a jolt. Hazel, already off balance, clawed at the blanket, missed his footing, and fell over the edge. He landed heavily on his weak leg and lay kicking. The dog was gone. Hazel stopped kicking and lay still. There was a spurt of pain along his haunch, but he knew that he could move. He remembered the raised floor of the barn across the farmyard. He could limp the short distance, get under the floor, and then make his way to the ditch. He raised himself on his forelegs. On the instant he was knocked sideways and felt himself pressed down. There was a light but sharp pricking beneath the fur across his back. He lashed out with his hind legs, but struck nothing. He turned his head. The cat was on him, crouched half across his body. Its whiskers brushed his ear. Its great green eyes, the pupils contracted to vertical black slits in the sunshine, were staring into his own.
"Can you run?" hissed the cat. "I think not."
Chapter 46. Bigwig stands his ground. Hard pounding, this, gentlemen. Let's see who will pound longest. The Duke of Wellington at Waterloo. Grunzel scrambled up the steep slope of the shaft and rejoined Wundwort in the pit at the top.
"There's nothing left to dig, sir," he said. "The bottom will fall in if anyone goes down there now."
"Can you make out what's below?" asked Wundwort. "Is it a run or a burrow we shall be into?"
"I'm fairly sure it's a burrow, sir," answered Grunzel. "In fact, it feels to me as though there's an unusually big space underneath."
"How many rabbits are in it, do you think?"
"I couldn't hear any at all, but they may be keeping quiet and waiting to attack us when we break in."
"We haven't done much attacking up to now," said Wundwort. "A poor lot, I'd say, skulking underground, and some of them running away in the night. I don't fancy we'll have much trouble."
"Unless, sir," said Grunzel.
Wundwort looked at him and waited.
"Unless the animal attacks us, sir," said Grunzel. "Whatever it is, it's not like Ragwort to imagine anything. He's very stolid. I'm only trying to think ahead," he added, as Wundwort still said nothing.
"Well," said Wundwort at last, "if there is an animal, it'll find out that I'm an animal, too."
He came out on the bank, where Campion and Vervain were waiting with a number of the other rabbits.
"We've done all the hard work now," he said. "We'll be able to take our does home as soon as we've finished down below. The way we'll go about it is this. I'm going to break the bottom of the hole in and go straight down into the burrow underneath. I want only three others to follow. Otherwise there'll be complete confusion, and we shall all be fighting each other. Vervain, you come behind me and bring two more. If there's any trouble, we'll deal with it. Grunzel, you follow. But you're to stay in the shaft, understand? Don't jump down until I tell you. When we know where we are and what we're doing, you can bring a few more in."
There was not a rabbit in the Ausler but had confidence in Wundwort. As they heard him preparing to go first into the depths of the enemy warren as calmly as though he were looking for dandelions, his officer's spirits rose. It seemed to them quite likely that the place would be given up without any fighting at all. When the general had led the final assault at Nutley Copse, he had killed three rabbits underground, and no more had dared to oppose him, although there had been some hard tussles in the outer runs the day before.
"Very well," said Wundwort. "Now I don't want anyone straying away. Campion, you see to that. As soon as we get one of the blocked runs open from inside, you can fill the place up. Keep them together here till I let you know, and then send them in fast."
"Best of luck, sir," said Campion.
Wundwort jumped into the pit, flattened his ears, and went down the shaft. He had already decided that he was not going to stop to listen. There was no point, since he meant to break in at once, whether there was anything to be heard or not. It was more important that he should not seem to hesitate or cause Vervain to do so, and that the enemy, if they were there, should have the shortest possible time in which to hear him coming. Below, there would be either a run or a burrow. Either he would have to fight immediately, or else there would first be a chance to look round and sense where he was. It did not matter. What mattered was finding rabbits and killing them. He came to the bottom of the shaft. As Grunzel had said, it was plainly thin, brittle as ice on a puddle, chalk, pebbles, and light soil. Windward scored across it with his foreclaws. Slightly damp, it held a moment and then fell inward, crumbling. As it fell, Windward followed it. He fell about the length of his own body, far enough to tell him that he was in a burrow. As he landed, he kicked out with his hind legs and then dashed forward, partly to be out of Vervin's way as he followed, and partly to reach the wall and face about before he could be attacked from behind. He found himself against a pile of soft earth, evidently the end of a blocked run leading out of the burrow, and turned. A moment later, Vervain was beside him. The third rabbit, whoever he was, seemed to be in difficulties. They could both hear him scrabbling in the fallen soil. "Over here," said Woodward sharply. The rabbit, a powerful, heavy veteran by the name of Thunder, joined them, stumbling. "What's the matter?" asked Woodward.
"Nothing, sir," answered Thunder. "Only there's a dead rabbit on the floor, and it startled me for a moment."
"A dead rabbit?" said Woodward. "Are you sure he's dead? Where is he?"
"Over there, sir, by the shaft."
Woodward crossed the burrow quickly. On the far side of the rubble that had fallen in from the shaft was lying the inert body of a buck. He sniffed at it and then pressed it with his nose. "He's not been dead long," he said. "He's nearly cold, but not stiff." "What do you make of it, Vervain? Rabbits don't die underground."
"It's a very small buck, sir," answered Vervain. "Didn't fancy the idea of fighting us, perhaps, and the others killed him when he said so."
"No, that won't do. There's not a scratch on him." "We'll leave him anyway. We've got to get on, and a rabbit this size isn't going to make any difference, dead or alive." He began to move along the wall, sniffing as he went. He passed the mouths of two blocked runs, came to an opening between thick tree roots, and stopped. The place was evidently very big, bigger than the council burrow at Ephrafer. Since they were not being attacked, he could turn the space to his own advantage by getting some more rabbits in at once. He went back quickly to the foot of the shaft. By standing on his hind legs, he could just rest his forepaws on the ragged lip of the hole.
"Groundsel," he said.
"Yes, sir,"
answered Groundsel from above. "Come on," said Woodward, "and bring four others with you. Jump to this side." He moved slightly. "There's a dead rabbit on the floor, one of theirs." He was still expecting to be attacked at any moment, but the place remained silent. He continued to listen, sniffing the close air, while the five rabbits dropped one by one into the burrow. Then he took Groundsel over to the two blocked runs along the eastern wall.
"Get these open as quick as you can," he said, "and send two rabbits to find out what's behind the tree roots beyond. If they're attacked, you're to go and join in at once."
"You know, there's something strange about the wall at the other end, sir," said Vervain, as Groundsel began setting his rabbits to work. "Most of it's hard earth that's never been dug, but in one or two places there are piles of much softer stuff. I'd say that runs leading through the wall have been filled up very recently, probably since yesterday evening."
Woundwort and Vervain went carefully along the south wall of the honeycomb, scratching and listening.
"I believe you're right," said Woundwort. "Have you heard any movement from the other side?"
"Yes, sir, just about here," said Vervain.
"We'll get this pile of soft earth down," said Woundwort. "Put two rabbits on it, if I'm right, and Thlele's on the other side. They'll run into trouble before long. That's what we want, to force him to attack them."
As Thunder and Thistle began to dig, Woundwort crouched silently behind them, waiting. Even before he heard the roof of the honeycomb fall in, Bigwig knew that it could only be a matter of time before the Ephrafans found the soft places in the south wall and set to work to break through one of them. That would not take long. Then he would have to fight, probably with Woundwort himself. And if Woundwort closed with him and used his weight, he would have little chance. Somehow he must manage to hurt him at the outset, before he expected it. But how? He put the problem to Holly.
"The trouble is this warren wasn't dug to be defended," said Holly. "That was what the slack run was for, back at home. So the Threera once told me. It was made so that if we ever had to, we could get down beneath an enemy and come up where he wasn't expecting us."
"That's it," cried Bigwig. "That's the idea. Look, I'm going to dig myself into the floor of the run just behind this blocked opening. Then you cover me with earth. It won't be noticed. There's so much digging and messing the place already. I know it's a risk,
but it'll be better than just trying to stand up in front of a rabbit like Woundwort.
But suppose they break through the wall somewhere else, said Holly.
You must try to make them do it here, replied Bigwig. When you hear them on the other side, make a noise. Do a bit of scratching or something, just above where I am. Anything to get them interested. Come on, help me to dig. And Silver, get everyone back out of the honeycomb now and close this wall completely.
Bigwig, said Pipkin, I can't wake Fiver. He's still lying out there in the middle of the floor. What's to be done?
I'm afraid there's nothing we can do now, replied Bigwig. It's a great pity, but we'll have to leave him.
Oh, Bigwig, cried Pipkin. Let me stay out there with him. You'll never miss me, and I can go on trying.
Leru, said Holly, as kindly as he could. If we lose no one but Fiver before this business has ended, then the Lord Frith himself will be fighting for us. No, I'm sorry, old chap. Not another word. We need you. We need everyone. Silver, see that he goes back with the others.
When Woundwort dropped through the roof of the honeycomb, Bigwig was already lying under a thin covering of soil on the other side of the south wall, not far from Clover's burrow. Thunder sank his teeth into a piece of broken root and pulled it out. There was an instant fall of earth, and a gap opened where he had been digging. The soil no longer reached to the roof. It was only a broad pile of soft earth, half filling the run. Woundwort, still waiting silently, could smell and hear a considerable number of rabbits on the far side. He hoped that now they might come into the open burrow and try to attack him. But they made no move. When it came to fighting, Woundwort was not given to careful calculation. Men and larger animals, such as wolves, usually have an idea of their own numbers and those of the enemy, and this affects their readiness to fight and how they go about it. Woundwort had never had any need to think like this. What he had learned from all his experience of fighting was that nearly always there are those who want to fight and those who do not, but feel they cannot avoid it. More than once he had fought alone and imposed his will on crowds of other rabbits. He held down a great warren with the help of a handful of devoted officers. It did not occur to him now, and if it had, he would not have thought it mattered, that most of his rabbits were still outside, that those who were with him were fewer than those on the other side of the wall, and that until Groundsel had got the runs open, they could not get out even if they wanted to. This sort of thing does not count among fighting rabbits. Ferocity and aggression are everything. What Woundwort knew was that those beyond the wall were afraid of him, and that on this account he had the advantage.
Groundsel, he said, as soon as you've got those runs open, tell Campion to send everyone down here. We'll have this business finished by the time the others get in to join us.
Woundwort waited only for Groundsel to bring back the two rabbits who had been sent to search among the tree roots at the north end of the burrow. Then, with Vervain behind him, he climbed the pile of fallen earth and thrust his way into the narrow run. In the dark, he could hear and smell the rustling and crowding of rabbits, both bucks and does, ahead of him. There were two bucks directly in his path, but they fell back as he ploughed through the loose soil. He plunged forward and felt the ground suddenly turn beneath him. The next moment, a rabbit started up from the earth at his feet and sank his teeth in the pit of his near foreleg, just where it joined the body. Woundwort had won almost every fight of his life by using his weight. Other rabbits could not stop him, and once they went down, they seldom got up. He tried to push now, but his back legs could get no purchase in the pile of loose, yielding soil behind him. He reared up, and as he did so, realized that the enemy beneath him was crouching in a scooped-out trench the size of his own body. He struck out and felt his claws score deeply along the back and haunch. Then the other rabbit, still keeping his grip under Woundwort's shoulder, thrust upward with his hind legs braced against the floor of the trench. Woundwort, with both forefeet off the ground, was thrown over on his back and the earth pile. He lashed out, but the enemy had already loosed his hold and was beyond his reach. Woundwort stood up. He could feel the blood running down the inside of his near foreleg. The muscle was wounded. He could not put his full weight on it. But his own claws, too, were bloody and this blood was not his.
"Are you all right, sir?"
asked Vervain behind him.
"'Cause I'm all right, you fool," said Wombwood. "Follow me close."
The other rabbit spoke from in front of him.
"You told me once to start by impressing you, General. I hope I have."
"I told you once that I would kill you myself," replied Wombwood. "There is no white bird here, Threlly."
He advanced for the second time. Bigwig's taunt had been deliberate. He hoped that Wombwood would fly at him and so give him a chance to bite him again. But as he waited, pressed to the ground, he realized that Wombwood was too clever to be drawn. Always quick to size up any new situation, he was coming forward slowly, keeping close to the ground himself. He meant to use his claws. Afraid, listening to Wundward's approach, Bigwig could hear the uneven movement of his forepaws almost within striking distance. Instinctively, he drew back, and as he did so, the thought came with the sound.
"The near forepaws dragging. He can't use it properly."
Leaving his right flank exposed, he struck out on his near side. His claws found Wundward's leg ripping sideways, but before he could draw back, Wundward's whole weight came down on him, and the next moment his teeth had met in his right ear. Bigwig squealed, pressed down and thrashing from side to side. Wundward, feeling his enemy's fear and helplessness, loosed his hold of the ear and rose above him, ready to bite and tear him across the back of the neck. For an instant, he stood above the helpless Bigwig, his shoulders filling the run. Then his injured foreleg gave way, and he lurched sideways against the wall. Bigwig cuffed him twice across the face and felt the third blow pass through his whiskers as he sprang back. The sound of his heavy breathing came plainly from the top of the earth pile. Bigwig, the blood oozing from his back and ear, stood his ground and waited. Suddenly, he realized that he could see the dark shape of General Wundwort faintly outlined where he crouched above him. The first traces of daylight were glimmering through the broken roof of the honeycomb behind. Chapter 47. The Sky Suspended.
"Old Bull, he comes for me with his head down. But I didn't flinch. I went for he. 'Twas him as did the flinching."
Flora Thompson, Larkrise. When Hazel stamped, Dandelion leaped instinctively from the grass verge. If there had been a hole, he would have made for it. For the briefest instant, he looked up and down the gravel. Then the dog was rushing upon him, and he turned and made for the raised barn. But before he reached it, he realized that he must not take refuge under the floor. If he did, the dog would check. Very likely a man would call it back. He had to get it out of the farmyard and down to the road. He altered direction and raced up the lane toward the elms. He had not expected the dog to be so close behind him. He could hear its breath and the loose gravel flying under its paws.
"It's too fast for me," he thought. "It's going to catch me."
In another moment, it would be on him, and then it would roll him over, snapping his back and biting out his life. He knew that hares, when overtaken, dodge by turning more quickly and neatly than the pursuing dog and doubling back on their track.
"I shall have to double," he thought desperately. "But if I do, it will hunt me up and down the lane, and the man will call it off, or else I shall have to lose it by going through the hedge. Then the whole plan will fail."
He tore over the crest and down toward the cattle shed. When Hazel had told him what he was to do, it had seemed to him that his task would consist of leading the dog on and persuading it to follow him. Now he was running simply to save his life, and that at a speed he had never touched before, a speed he knew he could not keep up. In actual fact, Dandelion covered 300 yards to the cattle shed in a good deal less than half a minute. But as he reached the straw at the entrance, it seemed to him that he had run forever. Hazel and the farmyard were long, long ago. He had never done anything in his life but run in terror down the lane, feeling the dog's breath at his haunches. Inside the gate, a big rat ran across in front of him, and the dog checked at it for a moment. Dandelion gained the nearest shed and went headlong between two bales of straw at the foot of a pile. It was a narrow place, and he turned round only with some difficulty. The dog was immediately outside, scratching eagerly, whining, and throwing up loose straw as it sniffed along the foot of the bales.
"Sit tight," said a young rat from the straw close beside him. "It'll be off in a minute. They're not like cats, you know."
"That's the trouble," said Dad.